How many times have you had to explain what occupational therapy professionals do? Unfortunately, our efforts to help the public understand the power of OT simply have not been as successful as we would like. But perhaps a growing public consciousness around the power and difficulty of habit change offers a unique opportunity for us to clearly communicate how we can help people change their habits to change their health. Emphasizing our role as habit change agents has multiple upsides. It differentiates us from our rehab colleagues. It positions us as leaders in caring for those with chronic conditions. It captures the long-term impact of our care. It highlights the skill and necessity of OT. It naturally connects our work to system-level change. And it allows us to draw on important research from adjacent fields like psychology. As we'll see in this week's scoping review on occupational therapy and habit change, we've been addressing habits since 1912. It is also a core part of our 2020 practice framework and is increasingly embedded in OT research. I should say that weaving habits language into our marketing message as OTs is not the focus of this article, but that passion is all my own. After we review the research, we'll welcome Dr. Zipporah Brown. She and I will discuss ways you can embed best practices around habit change into your OT practice. So let's dive in. Welcome to the OT Potential Podcast, where we review new and influential OT journal articles, then invite on an expert guest to help us pull out actionable takeaways that you can implement in your practice starting today. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Lyon, OTRL. And before we dive into this big topic of OT and habits, I wanted to let you know that this podcast may qualify as continuing education for you. You are probably listening to this podcast on a free podcast platform, but to gain CEU credit, you will need to be a member of the OT Potential Club, our OT continuing education platform. Bearing in mind that this could count as a CEU course, I wanted to state our two learning objectives so you can be thinking about them throughout the podcast today. Our first learning objective is you will be able to identify specific intervention strategies shared in research for achieving habit change. And second, you will be able to recognize strategies for helping your clients set habit-based goals. So let's begin by looking at our journal article, and then we'll bring on Zipporah to discuss how this could play out in your practice. The article that we are reviewing today is called Habits and Health Promotion in Occupational Therapy, a scoping review. This article comes to us from the Annals of International Occupational Therapy, and it was published in 2021. So the article begins with this background on occupational therapy, habits, and health promotion. As noted in our OT practice framework here in the United States, habits are central to the domain and scope of occupational therapy. Habits are one of the framework's four outlined performance patterns. Along with habits is routines, roles, and rituals. According to the World Health Organization, health promotion enables people to increase control over their own health. This effort covers a wide variety of social and environmental interventions designed to benefit and protect individual health and quality of life by addressing the root causes of ill health rather than focusing solely on treatment and cure. So there is this natural intersection between habits, health promotion, and OT, as occupational therapists are uniquely trained to evaluate and change the very context in which habits exist. They play a role in health promotion by encouraging engagement in healthy habits and routines that facilitate optimal health. The article also has this note on the difficulty of habit change. While changing habits to promote health sounds relatively simple, the reality is that habits are notoriously resistant to change. Goals and good intentions often are not enough to change a habit. Because habits are typically tied to environmental and contextual clues, we need evidence-based interventions to promote habit change. So where do habits fit within occupational theory? Habit change has been a central concept of occupational therapy throughout the history of the field. Dating back to 1912, habit training was established as a form of rehab intended to retrain individuals in activities of daily living and instill habits linked to meaningful occupation. One of occupational therapy's most popular theories, MOHO, or the Model of Human Occupation, linked habits to the environment. This theory was originally published in 1918, foreshadowing the popular science around habits. A broad overview of habit theory in occupational therapy includes two key themes. One, habits are often understood as a subset of routine, which in turn constitutes an occupation. And two, habits are often influenced, even triggered by the context in which they occur. So why was this scoping review needed now? While habit change has long been a part of occupational therapy practice in theory, our expertise in habits is needed now more than ever. Poor habits are inflicting unprecedented harm on global society, with 80% of deaths now attributed to four main disease categories that are linked to lifestyle habits. These four categories are cardiovascular disease, cancer, respiratory disease, and diabetes. Conversely, a recent study projected a lifespan increase of 12 to 14 years in individuals who maintain these five healthy habits. One, not smoking. Two, keeping a healthy body mass index. Three, participating in regular physical activity. Four, having low alcohol consumption. And five, having good nutrition. With global health heavily dependent on good habits, and given the difficulty of modifying habits, our expertise as OTs is needed now more than ever before, which leads us to the purpose of this research. So, what was the intent of this paper? The intent of this research was to map occupational therapy literature related to the role of habits in health promotion with a goal of shaping future occupational therapy research and practice. So what were their methods? This article was a scoping review, the protocol for which was assembled by the first author, Erin Epley, as she worked towards her post-professional OTD. And thank you for Erin to sharing an overview of her project in our capstone catalog at OT Potential. I encourage you to check that out. Studies were included in this review if they focused on prevention, health promotion, or wellness, had the implicit or explicit definition of habit as a behavior cued by situation, context, or environment, if it addressed habits with particular relevance to occupational therapy. So what were their results? The review included 20 articles, 13 empirical studies, and 7 non-empirical studies. All 20 articles were published between 2008 and 2020, with 16 written after 2014. 18 of the articles originated in the United States, one was from Australia, and one was from Denmark. So looking at the empirical sources, I'm going to pull out some of the highlights mentioned in the article. And in our overview in the club, you'll be able to click through and see the specific articles as they were linked to. Otherwise, I encourage you to go back to the original research and follow the trail to the specific papers. But looking high level, one of the articles featured a habit module, which was called Pick Two to Stick To, which used habit change techniques such as goal setting, action planning, self-monitoring, and motivational interviewing to help change habits for adults with metabolic syndrome. Another article used motivational interviewing and education to help adults prevent progression to fragility. Yet another article showcased a study on the effects of goal setting and accountability partners among college students. Another article featured community-based programs that worked with children and families on practicing routine awareness and embedding healthy behaviors into occupations. Lastly, there was a highlighted study that employed the REAL, R-E-A-L, diabetes intervention, which uses goal setting, self-management techniques, and social support. Looking at the non-empirical sources, three of the non-empirical studies that stood out to me were a scoping review of habit interventions, which featured literature from outside the realm of OT, a second article which advocated for the role of school OTs in promoting healthy habits, and third, an article which discussed the contribution of occupational science to healthy lifestyle changes through the pursuit of occupation. So headed into the discussion of this paper, the authors highlight that there has been a recent focus on habits in OT literature, especially since 2014. 6 empirical studies and 3 non-empirical studies noted the unique training that OTs have in environmental modification as a strength in their support of habit formation and change. 2 empirical studies mentioned the importance of embedding healthy habits within overarching routines. As this was a scoping review, the efficacy of different habit change strategies was not explored, but the strategies identified in this research included action planning, behavior practice and rehearsal, client education, goal setting, motivational interviewing, peer and family support, problem solving, providing information on consequences, and self-monitoring. The key implications for practice from this article, the authors state that occupational therapists should use their knowledge and expertise in environmental supports, barriers, and modifications to foster positive habit formation and change, ultimately promoting health for their clients. And given the importance of routine in supporting habit formation and retention, OT clinicians should assess routines and help their clients embed new habits into their existing routines. Okay, that is the end of our article review. I love a good scoping review. I love seeing what is out there in OT research, but I definitely left with questions about what does this actually look like in our occupational therapy practice? What can we be doing during intervention? How should this impact our goal setting? And I am just so thankful and excited because I feel like I found the perfect person to help speak to this. And that is Dr. Zipporah Brown, PPOTD, MSOTRL, DIPACLM. Zipporah is a licensed occupational therapist, assistant professor at Hawaii Pacific University, and an entrepreneur committed to increasing access to education in healthcare. Dr. Brown is a first-generation higher education trailblazer who completed her doctoral training at University of Southern California, specializing in health promotion through lifestyle optimization, occupational engagement, and community integration for vulnerable populations. She also co-founded the first student-run Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Association within the division. Dr. Brown is a board-certified lifestyle medicine professional, one of 2 occupational therapists in the entire state of Oregon with this designation. 20% of her work week is spent clinically. She is the inaugural occupational therapist at Linn County Department of Mental Health in Albany, Oregon. She works with individuals facing complex challenges due to physical, cognitive, developmental, and emotional factors to support them in managing their health. Additionally, Dr. Brown partners with organizations to develop community-centered health education programming with an emphasis on culturally relevant offerings. Within academia, Dr. Brown's role focuses on implementing health equity and lifestyle optimization curriculum within multidisciplinary graduate programs. Notably, she initiated the integration of lifestyle medicine competencies into the Doctor of Physical Therapy curriculum at Western University of Health Sciences, and then went on to spearhead a partnership with the American College of Lifestyle Medicine to become the first DPT program approved for the ACLM Partial Academic Pathway Program. Ultimately, Dr. Brown intentionally uses her formal training and lived experience to contribute to materializing impactful solutions that empower individuals and communities to heal and thrive. So without further ado, I will patch Zipporah onto this podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Zipporah. It's great to have you.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
I am so thankful to have you around this topic. I've wanted to have you since I heard this story. It was several years ago, but I heard that you and Carlin Rayom were at the Lifestyle Medicine Conference, and they were talking about habit change and prevention and seeing that need in our healthcare system. And the question at the time was like, we almost know what to do. We know what needs to happen, but who's going to do it? Who are the professionals that help with that? And I heard that you and Carlin were like, well, us, OTs. And that just highlights for me that habit change to me, like, is something that's distinct to OT, something we've done for so long, but it's also something that can connect us so much to other professions. And there's this whole amazing body of research. And I'm so excited to talk about it all today. But to start with, I would just want to learn a little bit more about you. How did you initially get interested in habit change and health promotion?
Yes. Thank you for that story and bringing it back to some of the formative discussions, especially as it relates to lifestyle medicine. My interest in habits, health promotion, and I'll even add in health equity are ultimately a byproduct of witnessing far too many loved ones grapple with inadequately addressed health issues. And as I've embarked on this journey of lifestyle optimization, identifying solutions for health issues that are addressable, I continue to be baffled by this public health crisis that is plaguing our society. And that is lifestyle-related chronic conditions, something that is absolutely addressable. And so I'll share just a few statistics. According to the CDC, 6 out of 10 adults in America have at least one chronic condition. 4 out of 10 have 2 or more. There's 1 in 3 adults that have prediabetes, and more than 80% of them are not aware of their condition. Over half of adults in America have some sort of heart condition. Heart disease continues to be the leading cause of death in America. And at least 7 of the leading causes of death are inextricably linked to lifestyle factors. And I say at least 7, with Alzheimer's being the potential 8, there's research starting to show that diabetes 3 or diabetes of the brain is what researchers are starting to refer to Alzheimer's as. And so when we think about these numbers, this is not just our patients and our clients. These are our loved ones, our friends, our colleagues, and even some of us, right? And so added on to that, historically marginalized folks are disproportionately impacted by these conditions. And data reflects that they have an even shorter lifespan and even worse health outcomes, which is a podcast episode of its own. But ultimately, my interest stems from my passion to change my family trajectory, and knowing that we're not an anomaly, that many people are experiencing these issues and wanting to be a part of implementing sustainable solutions that are meaningful and that increase quality of life.
You shared those statistics and they're so emotional. Like you said, they're so personal. They affect our work. They affect our families. They affect us. I feel like there's a growing knowledge about these stats and we almost know with a lot of them what we need to do, but we can't get to the place of actually moving our healthcare system to focus on this, which just raises so many questions for me about what OT's role is in moving this prevention forward. I'm curious, as I'm hearing you talking, is this stuff that you are learning because of your OT brain? How much are you intersecting with other disciplines? I guess, how also does this relate to lifestyle medicine? I know that's been a part of your history as well. Yeah, I'm just curious about all those connections too.
So first and foremost, I'm an occupational therapist through and through, right? And before that, I am all of the various identities that make me who I am and all of the experiences that I've had and even the generations that have come before me. And so in thinking about complementary approaches or ways to identify solutions, at the foundation, occupational therapists are distinctly qualified to address performance patterns, including habit training. However, I became certified in lifestyle medicine in 2022, and I had had an interest in it since 2018. Earlier on, my doctoral training focused on lifestyle optimization. But lifestyle medicine specifically, and I'll provide a definition for context, it's the use of evidence-based, whole-person, therapeutic lifestyle approaches to prevent, manage, and even reverse chronic conditions. So these therapeutic approaches include behavior change or habit training around six distinct pillars: whole food, plant-based eating patterns, regular physical activity, restorative sleep, stress management, social connection, and the avoidance of risky substances. So as you hear those pillars, as an occupational therapy practitioner, there's a direct intersection, right? And so the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, they seek to increase health equity by assisting individuals and families to adopt and sustain behaviors that will improve their health and quality of life. Again, more intersection. Similar to the American Occupational Therapy Association, this is echoed. This intent is echoed through Vision 2025, stating that as an inclusive profession, OT maximizes health, well-being, and quality of life for all people, populations, and communities through effective solutions that facilitate participation in everyday living. So for me, lifestyle medicine is a complementary therapeutic approach when addressing behavior change, habits, and health promotion in practice. It, to me, is the perfect fit, the perfect match. And it also gives a shared language for occupational therapy practitioners to communicate to the referring physicians and other healthcare professionals that may not be fully aware or oriented to the amazingness of what occupational therapy practitioners can do.
I love that call out of that shared language. That's what I love about habits. That's what I love about the lifestyle medicine pillars. And quick plug, if people are not on the Lifestyle Medicine newsletter, I love it. They like cover the six pillars each time and they share new research related to each pillar. It's just a really awesome newsletter. But zoning in on habits, I want to circle to this article. I love the call out that OTs have been doing this since, I think they said, 1912. It's just been a part of our work all these years. But in some ways, the research specifically around OT and habit training is also just emerging. Like, it's this interesting, like, we've been doing it forever, but the research is also still emerging because we're looking at this from a scoping review, more like early stage research. I really enjoyed this read. I love the language that it gave us. I'm curious what your takeaways from the article were.
I agree. I agree with what you've shared. First and foremost, this is a very timely article. It is certainly a tool that highlights and emphasizes our role in habit training and health promotion. This is a tool for practitioners that are serving populations across the lifespan to be able to reference as it relates to habit training and lifestyle optimization interventions. The 20 articles that were assessed and reviewed were various practice settings with various populations. Again, from working with kiddos to older adults, it's just an invaluable tool in terms of practitioners being able to have words to what we've definitely been trained to address. Also, a tool that can be used to help explain our role as it relates to various performance patterns, including habits, roles, and routines. And a tool as well for practitioners and educators and even administrators that may be advocating for the inclusion of maybe unique interventions depending on their settings or the inclusion of specific curriculum using the ACOT standards. And so it provides an opportunity to curate treatment approaches, curriculum approaches that are in alignment with our profession, but may not have been highlighted or magnified in the way that is necessary for us to establish ourselves as a key solution to this public health crisis. In thinking about the discussion with environment and context, I would offer the critique that I would have liked to see more of an emphasis on access, right? And so thinking about what if we can't adapt our environment? And so from an equity and perhaps even a societal level, one could have the volition, right? The motivation and desire to change their behavior, implement better habits, but maybe there's an inability to change their environment or make modifications, then what, right? And the article mentioned that the lifespan is dependent on good habits. 1,000% agree. I would add, though, that the lifespan is also dependent on access to healthy choices. And I shared earlier about the disproportionate impact on historically marginalized folks. That is a direct illustration of lack of access, increased exposure to toxins, toxic stress, racism, right? And so really thinking about this might require advocacy from the standpoint of occupational justice. It may not be on such a micro level. So I would have liked to have saw more of that in the article. But ultimately, nonetheless, this article is a wonderful contribution to our profession at a very pivotal time in society where folks at all levels, from government to practitioners to families to patients, are seeking solutions. And I think that this is certainly a tool to be able to work towards that.
Yeah, I just love this article. I appreciated it. I do like your call out of, I think, a pitfall that can surround habits is on the very surface level, it makes health sound like it's about individual choices and individual willpower. That's like what the surface level sounds like. But as soon as you dig into any habit research, the environment is such a big factor in all that we do or in all of our habits. And like you said, access to healthy habits is what really societal things are what drive individual habit change.
It's certainly layered, right?
I want to ask about some different parts of the OT process. But I actually want to start with this part on environmental modification because that came up in the article so much about how needed our training in that area is. Why is that training so needed? And what does that look like to help our clients through environmental modification?
That's a great question. So simply said, as occupational therapy practitioners, we recognize the interconnection between us as people, our environment, and what we do every day, the occupations we engage in, right? What we do every day as people is heavily influenced by our environment. It can either support or hinder our ability to participate in meaningful and healthy activities, right? So it has an impact on our habits, which in turn are connected to our routines. This includes our immediate surroundings, so home, work, school, church, et cetera, as well as broader societal factors, such as laws, policies, social norms, our context in terms of do we have access to grocery stores and fresh produce versus are there fast food restaurants on every corner? Like these all have an impact on our engagement. So it is important to assess the environment. And as occupational therapists, we are trained to identify barriers and supports. Thinking about something as foundational as the occupational profile, right? And going back to understanding the root of the problem. So our skill set in environmental modification is crucial for setting the client up for success. something as simple as visual cues or the lack thereof, right? Being able to support our client in understanding if you don't buy the Ben & Jerry's ice cream, you won't see it in your freezer and you won't eat it. Versus like encouraging them to maybe place the dog leash on the door handle, which will prompt them to take a walk. So these are different things that are imperative when we think about making changes. On the other end of the spectrum, as practitioners committed to occupational justice, we have to acknowledge that we may not be able to modify the environment in every case. And so that's okay because if we're creative. And so we can support the client in how they interact with their environment, right? Is it possible for you to take a different route home? Or can you pack a snack so when you pass the fast food restaurant, you're less likely to go? Can you park further at the grocery store so you get more steps in, right? So in addition to being trained and equipped to address environment modification, we are also trained and equipped to support our client in how they interact with their environment in the event that it cannot be modified. And then also on a more macro level, advocacy, advocating for policy change, advocating for access to healthier choices and the opportunity for engaging in healthier habits.
I think about all those just tiny changes we can make to our environment to make certain choices more attractive and to put other choices out of mind. And that is so powerful, I think, to our clients. And sometimes even to ourselves, those changes can feel small in the time. How do you sell clients on the importance of these small changes? I don't know. It's hard to capture our expertise in making these small changes. How do we communicate the power of this to clients?
So good. So first and foremost, I believe that it's pivotal that we reflect on our own experience as it relates to implementing new habits or changing an unhealthy behavior. We are educated, we are experts in these things, and we still struggle. And this can really help to humanize the evidence, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's an abundance of evidence and strategies, but it's not one size fits all. I think starting with that as our foundation to approaching our clients really helps with building therapeutic rapport and bringing forth our lived experience coupled with the evidence, right? Empowering our clients to know that habit change is a marathon. It's not a race. So even though we know that the evidence says that for physical activity, it's encouraged to participate in 150 minutes of physical activity and 2 days of strength training, perhaps the client does that for 1 week and then after they never do it again. But the consistency of them taking a 10-minute walk every day after not being active at all, that's more in alignment with healthy outcomes over time. So providing examples like that, giving them the evidence and then adding on a practical strategy that feels tangible, that feels attainable. And coupled with this, and I don't know if this is going too far off of your question, but considering where our client is, so using things like the stages of change theory, a client who is in pre-contemplation stage with no intention to change that conversation is going to look much different than a client who is in the stage of preparation and is ready to engage in action. So when talking to our client, knowing that it's not just about what we want for the client, what do they want for themselves? And going from there, right? It may just look like education, but then it also may look like action planning. And so in thinking about having the conversation with our clients, starting within, and then also having an understanding of where they are, because that's going to impact what they're ready to receive.
I love how that changes the dynamic of the session to be thinking of our relationship with our clients as this is something that we're doing on our own too. Like, as you're talking about habit change, I'm like 10% thinking about clients and 90% thinking about all the things I'm always trying to change. I mean, like, it's a journey of discovery, and it's like, feels like something that we can go alongside our clients in a really unique way, to provide that accountability, that support. But also, yeah, just humanizing it to be like, this is something everyone's doing, or trying to work on, something that we could all be better at. I'm curious about habit-based goals. I feel like when I was practicing, I never wrote habit-based goals. I think I didn't see examples of that, or wondered if they would be reimbursed in the same way. And by a habit-based goal, I'm just like, the client would do something 5 days a week or 7 days a week to establish that habit. Should we be writing more of those goals? What are the barriers to writing habit-based goals? Is that even a good idea? Or is everyone already doing that and I just wasn't? What do you think about that goal-setting process?
That's a really good question that I would venture to say is also layered. It's very dependent on practice setting, right? Mm. So it's dependent on practice setting. It's dependent on the reimburser. Is it private pay? Is it insurance-based? Is it maybe like bulk pay, like some community-based mental health settings? So first of all, I think we are absolutely qualified to be writing habit-based goals, and I would encourage it. I would add on to that, they should always be connected to function, because that's what distinguishes us as occupational therapists. And so we're thinking about creating a habit-based goal. We want the client to implement this habit to be able to improve function in what area, right? I think that that really, from a broad standpoint, not narrowing down to specific settings, specific populations, is thinking about how does implementing this new habit support the client? So if we're wanting the client to increase physical activity, is it as it relates to addressing their obesity? Is it related to addressing their A1C levels if we're talking about implementing like plant-forward nutrition so that they can reduce or reverse their diagnosis of diabetes? So wanting to think about how do the habit-based goals connect to an area of function that we're wanting to address? Does this habit make it easier for them to engage in their occupation? And so I think with keeping that at the basis, it would serve us best as it relates to us as occupational therapy practitioners. And then also in general, set goals that challenge the client but are also realistic. So going back to where they are in their stages of changing, if they're just contemplating change, it might be more about them being able to identify strategies versus actually implementing the strategies. So meeting the client where they are when we're thinking about these habits, and knowing that you have this long-term goal, right? This big picture, and then you're going to have those objectives, those short-term goals. And so when creating these goals, really thinking about the big picture as well as where your client is right now.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to even like my time in acute care and seeing my own beliefs as like self-limiting around goal setting, where I think there was a place for habit-based goals, especially around, we always had patients who were staying longer than a couple days, where those would have been really useful. And I just didn't write in that style. And I think I wish I could go back and get more curious to be like, I think this actually would work even in this reimbursement model. Yeah, and I'll be curious to hear people chime in on that aspect of it as well. The article was really clear that setting these goals is not enough. We need to be doing evidence-based interventions. What does that look like for OTs? to be helping people change habits during our sessions? What are those evidence-based things that we can do?
Yes. So starting out, education is so important. Digestible education, right? Thinking about health literacy levels, the terminology that we use. But many people don't know, for example, the ways in which stress or even lack of sleep has an impact on our health. So really thinking about how we can help our clients to connect the dots, because people want to be healthy. People want to feel good. So there's the education piece, and then there's the action planning, knowing that there are barriers in the environment and that making changes is challenging. Spending time to create a plan with your client to support or promote carryover. And then an aspect that, and so these two I saw in the scoping review and the various interventions, I don't recall seeing this aspect that I'm going to add, which is problem solving, because habit training is not linear. There will be trial and error. As occupational therapy practitioners, OTs, COTAs, it is important that we help our client to keep getting back on the horse, right? Knowing they're going to fall and thinking about, okay, that didn't work, and dissecting what about the initial plan didn't work, and then figuring out, okay, what can we try differently? So patience, I think when we think about our interventions and in the various practice settings, and then also that aspect of problem solving. And it can even be, we can use motivational interviewing to identify what is promoting this client wanting to change, and then building off of those strengths, which several of the articles made mention of. And also psychoeducation, various behavioral health strategies that can help with the client getting their mindset prepared for this change. Thinking about identifying ways to promote fresh starts, right? So the research reflects that people are more likely to embark on embracing a new habit when there is a fresh start, like a New Year's resolution, a birthday, on a Monday, at the beginning of the month. So thinking about how we can use those fresh starts to support our clients in action planning. And then also, we put the fun in functional. Okay, so people are more likely to want to do and stick to something that they enjoy, not that they feel like they have to do. So how can we make these habits fun? There's something called temptation bundling that Katie Milkman speaks about in her research, where you add this habit or this behavior to something that you enjoy doing. So an example that she uses often is that she only allows herself to watch TV or like streaming episodes when she is working out. And so she looks forward to working out because then she's able to catch the next episode. And so as occupational therapy practitioners, we are so creative in the different things that we can do. And it's no different when it comes to habit training. Something else that I'll offer, which I know that is dependent on practice setting, is the opportunity for group interventions and shared medical appointments, if possible. And this may take some advocacy, but there is research that reflects that group interventions provide the opportunity for peer education and peer support, right? If we think about things like Alcohol Anonymous, right? Oftentimes someone would be partnered with someone who's also in the program to be able to provide accountability. And then in terms of shared medical appointments with other healthcare providers, this has shown to reduce provider burnout. This provides the opportunity for the provider to spend more time with their clients and also to provide that education one time and have patients and clients be able to converse among themselves. And then when thinking about multiple providers, being able to collaborate on a shared goal and having the shared language. So those would be a few suggestions in terms of interventions specific to habit change.
I want to repeat back what I'm hearing, because I've read like Atomic Habits and Tiny Habits, and I'm hearing these same principles of make your initial change super small and achievable, make it enjoyable. If needed, change your environment to either put something away or nudge you towards it. If there can be like an epiphany or a fresh start around it, there seems to be something that helps with that. And the problem-solving thing that you said, I heard an NYU researcher talking about goal setting, and she encouraged people to think through all the barriers that would help them, or all the barriers to meeting that goal, so they could verbalize it beforehand, and that like help people achieve their goal over time. It's kind of like problem solving before the problem even starts and puts the patient in that problem solving mode. I was like, oh, that's so easy and actionable, and every OT could be doing that with their client as they're setting goals. Puts problem solving to the forefront. I think I want to ask, some of what you're talking about is embedded in like the co-op approach, which I'm a big fan of. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's like a problem solving OT approach. So some of us are learning this through approaches like that. But do we need more trainings that are specifically related to habit change? Like, are we learning it explicitly enough? I feel like we're learning parts of it and touching on it lots of places, but I don't know. It feels like we need even more training. Or do you think we know it all? I don't know. Where do we go with this?
Yes, that's a really good question. So as an academician, right, the ACOT standards guide education. They are broad, which is nice because it provides autonomy for curriculum development. But in the sense of cohesiveness, it is unclear as it relates to how much exposure entry-level practitioners have as it relates to performance patterns, including habit training. I choose to believe that as we start to really step in as the providers that can create solutions to health promotion and chronic condition management, that programs will put an emphasis on habit training and behavior change. I choose to believe that. And I really appreciate, from this standpoint, lifestyle medicine, because it provides a cohesive approach to training healthcare providers, right? And so a part of my work is supporting institutions in implementing something that's called the partial academic pathway through the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And it uses the lifestyle medicine competencies in connection with the profession's accrediting standards to be able to provide education surrounding lifestyle factors, habit training, and behavior change from the lens of that distinct profession. So to answer your question in short, I don't know if we're all being adequately trained, but I propose that there are solutions to us being adequately trained, and it's really going to be necessary because the referrals will come as we start to show that we're qualified in this area. We have to have the confidence to be able to address habit training.
Yeah, I just feel like the information is out there for us. And I don't want to call on specific people, but in OT, we need like you and Aaron Epley to like package this for us and standardize it and really like move us as a block in this direction. This just feels like one of our core competencies that we need to strengthen and move forward together in mass. And other people who can do that, but especially you.
But like, thank you for affirming and believing in me in that way. This is like a lot of what my work really focuses on, and specifically in academia, is integrating health equity and lifestyle optimization competencies. So it's, and there are actually a growing body of occupational therapy academicians that are really like trailblazing and getting behind educating future practitioners to be equipped to prevent and address chronic conditions. So I'm excited to be amongst some amazing folks. And I believe we're going to start to see the literature come out about our role in this and what folks are doing.
Mm-hmm. Can you speak specifically to how you see this advancing our profession? I'm like, we know the need is there, but are the reimbursement models there? Like, if I wanted to go out, I know I could incorporate this into traditional OT work. Are there roles coming that are more focused on prevention? Where do you see this going? Is our healthcare system ever going to change to really allow us to focus on this? What's your future casting there?
That's a loaded question. I'll start out with saying we have to have hope. We have to have hope, because without hope, we won't take action. So I think since the inception of our profession, we have continuously adapted to the needs of society. I feel so honored to be a part of a profession that continuously adapts to what society needs. It just speaks to the richness of who we are as a profession, right? From our roots in mental health to transitioning to more of a biomedical model with the need for more providers to provide rehabilitation in that way. So we're a profession that adapts. I'll just start with us before I look at healthcare as a whole. And if we think about our profession, something that we do really well is we humanize things that are so challenging. And we just focus on, we don't just, but we, an emphasis is that we focus on doing, getting our clients to do, right? And helping our clients to be able to grasp these things that can be challenging in a supportive way. We walk with our clients, right? We understand the challenges of engagement, and we provide tools. So that's beautiful. And it sounds fluffy and heartwarming. And it's like, you know, OTs are superheroes. But then we have to think about reimbursement and where does this fit in our medical models? And so first and foremost, as occupational therapists in traditional positions, there's absolutely opportunity for this because we can do habit training through using codes that connect to therapeutic activities. We can do habit training and connect it to cognitive training. We can connect it to self-care. So we have to be very creative in how we curate our documentation, but don't lose the hope, right? And hone into those amazing things that we learned in our education. I saw a post on Instagram that was like, in occupational therapy school, one day you're learning out about the brain and neuroplasticity, and the next day you're making arts and crafts. And I'm like, yes, because we know how to connect those things. And then the next day we're making splints. And they're all related to how we engage. And so there are traditional OT CPT codes that can be used when thinking about habit training that are probably the safest way. And I am in Oregon, to add context. And so in the state of Oregon, occupational therapists are recognized as qualified mental health providers. And so within my clinical position, I bill QMHP codes that look at psychoeducation and group interventions that are specific in the community-based mental health settings. And so it's going to depend on where we're situated, but also we're literally known for making positions when there isn't one. I'm the first occupational therapist to work with the county that I work with now. And I advocated for my role. I'm like, you all are hiring for many positions. I'm noticing this is the need. Here is how I, as an occupational therapist, can contribute. And so we've been doing this, right? Like our role in maternal mental health, our role in pelvic floor therapy, our role in toileting, like these different things that we are trained to do, but folks may not know that, right? Our role in policy and advocacy. We have been having to show what our role is. And so I think a really distinct area that I and many colleagues would like to see is more occupational therapists in primary care, because physicians and medical doctors, they have limited time with the patient. They tell the patient the results of the labs, and not minimizing their role, right? They're crucial in our healthcare, but they don't have the bandwidth. They have so many clients they have to see in one day, and they're diagnosing and maybe making suggestions, but who's helping the client see the plan through? And that's really where we come in. But we have to be able to express and advocate for our role in addressing this public health crisis, and express our role in our ability to prevent, starting with kids, right? Like programming in the schools, addressing health. And so it can go so many directions, but ultimately we have a flawed system right now, because most Americans are engaging in unhealthy habits. And we have to ask ourselves, why is that, right? We know stress is a big factor, but why else is that? Because people want to be healthy. People want to be comfortable and live a long life and engage with their loved ones. And so it's really about us showing the value that we know that we add. And so that's going to look like getting in front of other audiences.
I just feel like soaring and sweeping, thinking about the opportunities, and get excited for the OT trailblazers to help push us in this direction, and also just like collectively moving as a block in this direction. I know I'm inspired about that, and I hope everyone listening is as well. We're getting close to the end of our time. I want to end on some tiny habits we can start with today and ask you, just on a personal level, how is knowing all this like impacting your work personally? What are you doing as a practitioner and as an educator that maybe we could take and replicate?
Yes, I appreciate that question. So I'll start out with myself personally. I take being a lifelong learner to heart. And so going back to how I became interested in thinking about my familial history, I am inspired to change my family trajectory, right? And so we can know better, but we have to do better. And so personally, embarking on this work holds me accountable to also practice healthy habits, but it also continues to keep me humble in the fact that I know this. I'm teaching others this, and I still struggle, right? And so the constant exposure to it helps me to really walk the talk, right? And so clinically, I work with folks that are living with persistent serious mental illness in the community to really address their health promotion, and their health management. Secondary to their serious mental illness diagnosis. So oftentimes folks with persistent serious mental illness as a result have chronic conditions, diabetes, heart disease, substance abuse, the whole gamut. And so it's a really unique opportunity to be able to provide these folks with education surrounding healthy habits and healthy choices. And so one of the things that I'm really proud of is I facilitate a plant-forward cooking group with the clients that I work with. I go to their home. It's a residential facility. I go to their home, and each week we cover a different pillar of lifestyle medicine, and then we cook a meal together, and we action plan, and then they create a short-term goal, and the next week we talk about it, and we problem solve, and then we create another goal. And so that's what I'm doing clinically, and then also on more of the entrepreneurial, parallelpreneur role, I partner with organizations to provide culturally responsive opportunities. And so recently, I collaborated with a local NAACP chapter and facilitated a workshop on self-care strategies. And I based the self-care strategies on the pillars of lifestyle medicine and spoke about how self-care is necessary for our health. And engaging in these pillars is a matter of self-care when we think about having an optimal life. And then within academia, I am incorporating curriculum surrounding health equity and lifestyle optimization competencies for interprofessional programs. And so not just occupational therapy, which is really exciting, because then I'm able to emphasize OT's role to future healthcare providers, physical therapists. Notably, I spearheaded the partnership with American College of Lifestyle Medicine and Western University of Health Sciences Physical Therapy Department to become the first PT program, a part of the lifestyle medicine pathway. So this allowed me to be able to be in front of physical therapy students and sharing with them about how occupational therapists and physical therapists could collaborate to provide restoration and rehabilitation for folks that are at risk for or living with chronic conditions. Actually, I just had an article published about this work, which I'll send to you so we can maybe link to the notes. But that's a short version of how I'm incorporating this into my practice.
I love hearing your story and the specifics of how this information has influenced your work and influenced your life, and so personal for your family. This is such an important movement for our profession, for our globe. I so appreciate the trailblazing that you've done. I look forward to more pioneering work from you and others in this area. I wish we could keep talking, but we're at the end of our time. What's the closing thought that you want to leave us with today?
Thank you for having me. First and foremost, this is a necessary topic, and I feel so honored to be a part of the conversation. What I will leave folks with as a major takeaway is change is multi-layered. Implementing new habits is challenging, even in the most ideal situations, but it's absolutely possible. And as occupational therapy practitioners, we are distinctly trained. We are distinctly qualified to be able to be a part of the solution and support our clients, our patients, our communities as it relates to various performance patterns, including habit training. And so tap into your unique toolkit that is rooted in science and art. Embrace your lived experiences and reference the evidence. And when in doubt, start with the OT practice framework and build from there. But our brain is designed to change despite it being challenging. And just know that it's possible.
Zipporah, thank you so much for casting this work of OT that can be start to feel familiar during our day-to-day and really highlighting how needed it is. When it comes to change, I'm afraid too often we think change isn't possible, like deep down in our hearts. And this is just a good reminder that change is possible. We are the profession who's here to help with that. And yeah, again, I just appreciate your leadership and trailblazing here. Thank you so much for this conversation and being here today.
Yes, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you too.
Wow, you all, I was already fired up about OT and habit change before this conversation, and this episode just makes me feel all the more so. I really believe that naming and claiming this area of health could make our value as OTs seem even more distinct, but also connect us to other disciplines and research in unprecedented ways. I'll be sharing the resources mentioned in this podcast in our show notes. And in particular, I just want to point you to an entry in our Capstone catalog where you can see Erin Epley's Capstone project that made this paper and this episode possible. And a special thanks to Erin for hopping on a call with me to help me make this episode even stronger. As always, I want to hear what your thoughts are. In particular, what are your thoughts for how to keep the momentum going around habit change and occupational therapy? If you are a casual listener, we'd love a review from you, and you can now review us on Google from our homepage, or we always appreciate your comments on our YouTube video. But the best place to really discuss the implications of this is in the OT Potential Club. I'll be watching for your comments in our forum. The OT Potential Club is also where you will go to earn a CEU certificate for your time today. You can either sign in or sign up at otpotential.com. And once you are in there, you can take a 5-question test. And when you pass, we will generate a certificate for your time today. Okay, I want to thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. I hope this podcast helps keep you informed and inspired as an OT professional. Take care, and we'll talk next time.